me.
Good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Whiskey 8 Mike Whiskey, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found at www.scarsvoip.com. You have many net controls this evening. I'm merely opening it up this evening. My call is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. My name is Kathleen. I'm located in the city of Port St. Lucie, Florida, where we have a current temperature of 73 and was about a high of 78 today, but a very beautiful day. Prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, please come aboard. All right, hearing no emergency traffic, that's always a great thing. Do we have anyone celebrating maybe their birthday this week, maybe today, maybe next week, or maybe an anniversary or something special? If so, I ask you to come aboard. All right. No birthday stations, and I always say this, means we're not getting any older. This is a monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and or other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. Now let me advise all stations connected that this net will be recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. All stations participating will be part of that recording. Once again, this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Our topic this evening is super heterodyne receivers. So without any further ado, I'm going to throw it over to KY6V. Thanks for allowing me to open it up this evening, and I hope everyone has a grand time. KY6B, are you ready?
Yes, ma'am. Thanks, Kathy. Welcome all. Gordon here, KY6V. Tonight's program will be covering the technical technology, if you will, behind the super heterodyne receiver. And doing so, we will be talking about what happens in the receiver from the time it hears a signal to the time one starts hearing audio from the output of your speaker. Heterodyning and mixing is the secret in this piece of equipment. So allow me to get on with the program and see if David's ready, and we'll get things started here. GW8SZL from KY6V. How say you, senor?
KY6V from Golf Whiskey 8 Sierra Zulu Lima. I'm always ready there, Gordon, always ready. And it's an hour earlier tonight because our clocks haven't gone forward yet. So it's just gone, what is it, 23:04 local time. Okay, let's continue with the program. Okay, although a number of researchers discovered the superheterodyne concept, filing patents only months apart, American engineer Edwin Armstrong is often credited with the concept. He came across it while considering better ways to produce RDF receivers. He had concluded that moving to higher shortwave frequencies would make RDF more useful, and was looking for practical means to build a linear amplifier for these signals. At the time, shortwave was anything above 500 kilohertz, beyond any existing amplifier's capabilities. It had been noticed that when a regenerative receiver went into oscillation, other nearby receivers would start picking up other stations as well. Armstrong and others eventually deduced this was caused by a supersonic heterodyne between the station's carrier frequency and the regenerative receiver's oscillation frequency. When the first receiver began to oscillate at high outputs, its signal would flow back out through the antenna that we received on any nearby receiver. On that receiver, the two signals mixed, just as they did in the original heterodyne concept, producing an output that is a difference in frequency between the two signals. For instance, consider a lone receiver that was tuned to a station at 300 kHz. If a second receiver is set up nearby and set to 400 kHz with high gain, it will begin to give off a 400 kHz signal that will be received in the first receiver. Now in that receiver, the two signals will mix, produce four outputs. One at the original 300 kHz, another at the received 400 kHz, and two more. The difference out at 100 kHz, and the sum at 700 kHz. Now this is the same effect that Fessenden had proposed, but in his system, the two frequencies were deliberately chosen so the beat frequency was audible. In this case, all of the frequencies are well beyond the audible range, and thus supersonic, giving rise to the name superheterodyne. Armstrong realized that this effect was a potential solution to the shortwave amplification problem, as a different output still retained its original modulation, but on a lower carrier frequency. In the example above, one can amplify the 100 kHz beat signal and retrieve the original information from that. The receiver does not have to tune into the higher 300 kHz original carrier. By selecting an appropriate set of frequencies, even very high frequency signals could be reduced to a frequency that could be amplified by existing systems. For instance, to receive a signal at 1500 kHz, far beyond the range of efficient amplification at that time, one could set up an oscillator at, for example, 1560 kHz. Armstrong referred to this as the local oscillator, or LO. As its signal was being fed into a second receiver in the same device, it did not have to be powerful, generating only enough signal to be roughly similar in strength to that of the received station. Now when the signal from the local oscillator mixes with the stations, one of the outputs will be the heterodyne difference frequency, and in this case, 60 kHz. He termed this result in difference the intermediate frequency, often abbreviated to IF. Now in December 1919, Major E.H. Armstrong gave publicity to an indirect method obtaining shortwave amplification, called the superheterodyne. The idea is to reduce the incoming frequency, which may be, for example, 1,500,000 cycles, that's 200 meters, to some suitable, super-audible frequency that can be amplified efficiently, and then pass in this current through an intermediate frequency amplifier, then finally rectifying and carrying on to one of the two stages of audio frequency amplification. Now the trick is, to the superheterodyne, is that by changing the local oscillator frequency, the LO, you can tune in different stations. For example, to receive a signal at 1300 kHz, one could tune the local oscillator to 1360 kHz, resulting in the same 60 kHz IF. Now this means the amplifier section can be tuned to operate at a single frequency, the design IF, which is much easier to do efficiently. Okay, this is Dolph Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima, with the Thursday information net on the SCARS Echolink conference server. Looking for any comments, anybody like to check in at this time? From TW8SZL, if you'd like to do so, please call now.
Hotel Alpha.
Delta Yankee.
Okay, from GW8SNR, I got you there, Fred, K2HA, the happy amateur. I saw a key up from Robert, VK2DY, but no audio. Is there anybody else who'd like to be added to the list? If so, call now.
Nota Bene, and I could hear Robert on Echo Link, David.
Yeah, okay there, Scott. I've got you. KY4MB, Mr. Noto Bene. I'll never get that right with a correct accent. And yeah, I heard you that time, Robert. So I've got Fred, Robert, and Scott. Okay, I'm going to go to the top of the list to Fred. K2HA from GW8SNL. Go ahead there, Fred.
Well, very good, Dave, over there in South Wales. This is Fred K2HA over here by Philadelphia, Broomall, Pennsylvania. And very well explained. The only thing we need to do now is get into the lab, and you help us go ahead and try those. Try those circuits. That would be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. This is Fred, K2HA. Back to you, Dave.
Yeah, K2HA from GW8SNL. Yeah, okay there, Fred. Yeah, they are good fun. When I got licensed many, many moons ago, I did actually have a nice little play with things like that. It's a long, long time ago now. But it was absolutely fantastic fun. And if anybody got the bits and pieces necessary to have a little play, go ahead and do it. And they say you need a bit of test equipment to go along with it, though, there, Fred. What do you think? K2HA, GW8SZL.
Yeah, that's well worth it. You know, really, somebody should put out a little kit. A kit for young people just learning and putting it all together. And that would be a great project for a classroom. I've got to think about that. This is for K2HA. Back to you, Dave. And please give our greetings to Miss Sue there and Declan.
Yeah, K2HA from GW8SNL. Well, Sue is with me. Declan has gone to bed because he's got school in the morning, so I'll pass that on when I wake him up. And about 7:15 now. Tomorrow. And yeah, I remember not having much test equipment, very, very sort of, shall we say, not that accurate and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I'm drifting around and all the rest of it and all the bits and pieces and, you know. But it was good fun. You know, if it all worked perfectly the first time, then, you know, I personally think I wouldn't have learned as much, but other people might vary on that one, but I thought it was good fun trying to make it more stable and doing this and that and all the rest of it. Okay, Fred, do you have anything further before I move along to Robert from GW8SNL?
No, well, thank you very much for your elucid description of the circuit and how it worked. That was great. And greetings all that are listening and everybody who's listening to the podcast. Peace and blessings to you all. This is Fred, K2HA.
K2HA from GW8SNL. Yeah, okay there, Fred, and thanks for popping in and saying hi and passing the comments on there as well. Okay, I'm going to clear with Fred. That's K2HA up in Broomall in Pennsylvania. And now we're going to the other side of the planet. Then to Kellyville Ridge in Sydney, Australia, and that will be Robert, VK2DY. Go ahead, from GW8SZL.
GW8SZL, VK2DY, indeed, in Kellyville Ridge, New South Wales, where it is 19 degrees Celsius, 66 Fahrenheit, and only going to get up to 24 today. We're getting a touch of autumn here. It's overcast, it's cold. And yeah, and tomorrow apparently we get under 12 hours of daylight, so the night gets longer than the day. But it is autumn. Anyway, other than that, thank you very much for taking my check-in, and thank you for your explanation. I do like Fred's idea of coming up with kits or some kind of system that we can play with this kind of stuff, because I think everybody does really learns better by doing than by listening, and I really would like to be able to play with this and see exactly how it works and see how it does. So if you guys come up with something, you should definitely let us know. VK2DY, back to me.
VK2DY from GW8SLL. Okay there, Robert, we're currently sat at 49 Foxtrot, 9.4 Charlie. It's cloudy, and the local time is 23:16, and of course, we are heading for spring and summer. So totally directly opposite to yourself there in the Southern Hemisphere. Yeah, some kind of kit would be nice, actually. And I'm actually looking for kits in absolutely ages. I have to do a little search and see if there are any out there. Well, it would be fun anyway. And, you know, so you can actually try and cure all the little problems. And curing problems, in my opinion anyway, you learn an awful lot more rather than just putting something together and it works first time, you know, perfectly. Okay, do you have anything further there, Robert, before I move along to Scott? VK2DY, GW8SNL.
No, thank you, Dave. I think I'm looking forward to the rest of the program. VK2DY, back to Matt.
Okay, thank you, Robert, from GW8SNL. Now we go to Scott, Kilo Yankee 4. I'm going to try it. Noto bene. You'll have to give me a mark out of 10 for that. Have you got any questions or comments there, Scott? KY4MV, I'm not going to try it a second time. GW8SNL, go ahead.
GW8SNL, Kilo Yankee 4, Noto bene. Well, that was awesome. Wonderful there, Dave. As far as I can tell, you know, I'm just a Southern boy here trying to say that. And Fred does the best job of it. He came up with that, and but yeah, he can say that. So we're good here. 69 degrees, Foxtrot, and I got my exercise in, trying to get some of these kilos off, or pounds off, or stones off, or whatever it is off, and get around better, and it's working so far. 15 pounds, maybe 20 pounds at the most, a couple of months, and probably need to drink some more water, so I don't think that's totally accurate, but it's good 10 or 12 pounds easily, however you cut it there. Hi. But, well, let's see. That's a fascinating topic. I'll have to study some more on it. And it looks like the radios we use today are those super heterodyne radios. I guess they're all into this software-defined stuff now there, Dave. But kind of missed just the analog signals with the radio and the TV and put the antenna up and the rabbit ears. And I don't know if we're ruining everything with all this digital stuff, but I guess not, because we're talking around the world, and it'd be hard to do that otherwise as easily as I'm yakking here on the phone to everybody. But thanks for doing it tonight, Dave, and do say hi to young Declan and Sue there for sure, and hope everything's okay over on your side of the pond. And got basketball coming up, March Madness, NCAA tournament and all that stuff. So that's what's going on here, Dave. Back over to you. Let's get some more check-ins and more topics going. KY4, Nota Bene, over to GW8SNL in the net. 7-3's all.
Yeah, KY4MB from GW8SNL. Yeah, okay there, Scott. Yeah, any sort of weight loss, and most of it actually comes off pretty quickly. And that's just basically water, though. And then it starts slowing down, and people think, oh, why isn't it coming off so fast and all that kind of stuff. And they get disheartened, and that's the weight loss program out the window there. Hi. Okay there, Scott. Thanks for checking in and saying hi. Okay. Scott was down the bottom of my checking list, so I'm going to see if Chief W4 Radio Frequency Junkie is out there to continue with this evening's program. So W4RFJ, are you out there, Chief, from GW8SZL?
Yeah, I'm here. How do you copy?
Lima Charlie, no problems at all. Like you sat next to me there, Chief. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, well, between Charlotte's phone dropping me off the SCARS conference and my phone not taking a good enough charge, we finally got hooked back up again. Missed all the check-ins and the latter part of your dissertation, but I guess my turn is dealing with circuit description. To receive a radio signal, of course, a suitable antenna is required. The output of the antenna may be very small, often only a few microvolts. The signal from the antenna is tuned and may be amplified in a so-called radio frequency amplifier. Although this stage is often omitted, one or more tuned circuits at this stage block frequencies that are far removed from the intended reception frequency. To tune the receiver to a particular station, the frequency of the local oscillator is controlled by the tuning knob, for instance, and tuning of the local oscillator in the RF stage may use a variable capacitor or a vari-cap diode. The tuning of one or more tuned circuits in the RF stage must track the tuning of the local oscillator. So with that, we move into the local oscillator mixer. Let me grab a nickel. The signal is then fed into a circuit where it is mixed with a sine wave from a variable frequency oscillator known as the local oscillator. The mixer uses a nonlinear component to produce both sum and difference beat frequency signals, each one containing the modulation contained in the aforementioned desired signal. The output of the mixer may include the original RF signal at frequency RF, the local oscillator signal at frequency low, and the two new heterodyne frequencies, which is the RF frequency plus the local oscillator frequency and the radio frequency minus the local oscillator frequency. The mixer may inadvertently produce additional frequencies such as third and higher order intermodulation products. Ideally, if the IF band pass filter removes all but the desired IF signal at frequency IF. The IF signal contains the original modulation transmitted information that the received radio signal had at the main RF frequency. The frequency of the local oscillator, FLO, is set so the desired reception radio frequency, FRF, mixes to the FIF. There are two choices for the local oscillator frequency because the dominant mixer products are at frequency RF plus or minus frequency LO. If the local oscillator frequency is less than desired reception frequency, it is called the low side injection, which is frequency IF equals frequency RF minus frequency local oscillator. If the local oscillator higher, then it is called a high side injection, which again, frequency IF equals frequency local oscillator minus frequency RF. Let me reset timers. Okay, the mixer will process not only the desired input signal at the RF frequency, but also all signals present at its inputs. There will be many mixer products or heterodynes. Most other signals produced by the mixer, such as due to stations at nearby frequencies, can be filtered out in the IF-tuned amplifier. That gives the super heterodyne receiver its superior performance. However, if FLO is set to FRF plus FIF, then an incoming radio signal at FLO plus FIF will also produce a heterodyne at the IF frequency. The frequency of the local oscillator and the frequency of the IF is called the image frequency and must be rejected by the tuned circuits in the RF stage. The image frequency is two frequency IF higher or lower than the desired frequency of FRF. So employing a higher IF frequency increases the receiver's image rejection without requiring additional selectivity in the RF stage. To suppress the unwanted image, the tuning of the RF stage and the LO may need to track each other. In some cases, a narrow band receiver can have a fixed tune RF amplifier. In that case, only the local oscillator frequency is changed. In most cases, the receiver's input band is wider than its IF center frequency. For example, a typical AM broadcast band receiver covers 510 kilohertz to 1,655 kHz, a roughly 1160 kilohertz input band with a 455 kilohertz IF frequency, and FM broadcast band receiver covers 88 to 108 megahertz band with a 10.7 megahertz IF frequency. In that situation, the RF amplifier must be tuned so the IF amplifier does not see two stations at the same time. If the AM broadcast band receiver local oscillator were set to 1200 kilohertz, it would see stations at both 745 kilohertz, that would be the 1200 minus the 455, and 1655 kilohertz consequently. Okay, I did complete college. I hope I got that one right. The RF stage must be designed so that any stations that are twice the IF frequency away are significantly attenuated. The tracking can be done with a multi-section variable capacitor or some varactors driven by a common control.
Okay, you timed out before you were going to open it up to the public. Over.
Amplifier may have tuned circuits at both its input and its output, so three or more tuned circuits may be tracked. In practice, the RF and local oscillator frequencies need to track closely, but not perfectly. Did that get it?
That's close enough. Thank you.
Okay, now taking check-ins. This is W4RFJ. Okay, I'm not hearing any. I guess we'll see if the alien life form is present. KE5ALF. It's your turn, sir, W4RFJ. I relinquish the mic.
Well, thank you, W4RFJ. This is KE5ALF, your resident alien. And I'm ready to start with my section. In the days of two-valve electronics, it was common for super heterodyne receivers to combine the functions of the local oscillator and the mixer in a single tube, leading to a savings in power and especially costs. A signal pentagrid converter tube would oscillate and also provide signal amplification as well as frequency mixing. The IF amplifier, the stages of an intermediate frequency amplifier, otherwise known as an IF amplifier or IF strip, are tuned to a fixed frequency that does not change as the receiving frequencies change. The fixed frequency simplifies the optimization of the IRF or the IF amplifier. The IF amplifier is selective around its center frequency, FIR. The fixed center frequency allows the stages of the IF amplifier to be carefully tuned for best performance. This tuning is called aligning the IF amplifier. If the center frequency changed with the receiving frequency, then the IF stages would have had to track their tuning. This is not the case with the super heterodyne. Normally, the IF center frequency, FIF, is chosen to be less than the range of the desired reception frequencies, FRF. That is because it is easier and less expensive to get high selectivity at a lower frequency using tuned circuits. The bandwidth of a tuned circuit with a certain Q is proportional to the frequency itself. And what's more, a higher Q is achievable at lower frequencies. So fewer IF filter stages are required to achieve the same selectivity. Also, it is easier and less expensive to get high gain at a lower frequency. Let me reset here real quick. However, in many modern receivers designed for reception over a wide frequency range, as in scanners and spectrum analyzers, a first IF frequency higher than the reception frequency is employed in a double conversion configuration. For instance, the Rode and Schwarz EK070VLF-HF receiver covers 10 kHz to 30 MHz. It has a band switch RF filter and mixes the input to a first IF of 81.4 MHz and a second IF frequency of 1.4 MHz. The first low frequency is 81.4 to 111.4 megahertz, a reasonable range for oscillator. But if the original RF range of the receiver were to be converted directly to the 1.4 megahertz intermediate frequency, the LO frequency would need to cover 1.4 to 31.4 megahertz, which cannot be accomplished used tuning circuits. A variable capacitor with a fixed inductor would need a capacitance range of 500 to 1. Image rejection is never an issue with such a high IF frequency. The first IF stage uses a crystal filter with a 12 kilohertz bandwidth. There is a second frequency conversion, making a triple conversion receiver, that mixes the 81.4 megahertz first IF with 80 megahertz to create a 1.4 megahertz second IF. Image rejections for the second IF is not an issue, as the first IF has a bandwidth of much less than 2.8 megahertz. Let me check here real quick. To avoid interference to receivers, licensing authorities will avoid assigning common IF frequencies to transmitting stations. Standard intermediate frequencies used are 455 kHz, which is medium wave AM radio, to 10.7 MHz for broadcast FM receivers at 38.9 MHz, which is European, or 45 MHz US. For television, and 70 megahertz for satellite and terrestrial microwave equipment. To avoid tuning costs associated with these components, most manufacturers then tended to design their receivers around a fixed range of frequencies offered, which resulted in a worldwide de facto standardization of intermediate frequencies. In early superheats, the IF stage was often a regenerative stage, providing the sensitivity and selectivity with fewer components. Such superheats were called supergainers or regenerodynes. This is also called a Q multiplier, involving a multiple modification to an existing receiver, especially for the purpose of increasing selectivity. That's it for my section. So before I turn it over to KO4UMQ Woody, I'd like to have any check-ins or comments or questions. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to turn it over to KO4UMQ Woody. Are you there, sir? It's your turn.
Well, thank you, Greg, and good evening to you, and good evening to everyone else on the net. This is Woody, KO4UMQ. I'm going to start off my section tonight and talk about IF band pass filters. The IF stage includes a filter and or multiple tuned circuits to achieve the desired selectivity. This filtering must have a band pass equal to or less than the frequency spacing between adjacent broadcast channels. Ideally, a filter would have a high attenuation to adjacent channels, but maintain a flat response across the desired signal spectrum in order to retain the quality of the received signal. This may be obtained using one or more dual-tuned IF transformers, a quartz crystal filter, or a multipole ceramic crystal filter. In the case of television receivers, no other technique was able to produce the precise bandpass characteristic needed for vestigial sideband reception. I'm sure I butchered that word. Such as that used in the NTSC system, first approved by the U.S. in 1941. By the 1980s, multiple component capacitor inductor filters had been replaced with precision electromechanical surface acoustic wave, or SAW, filters. Fabricated by precision laser milling techniques, SAW filters are cheaper to produce, can be made to extremely close tolerances, and are very stable in operation. Let me reset the timers. The received signal is now processed by the demodulator stage, where the audio signal or
other baseband signal is recovered and then further amplified. AM demodulation requires envelope detection, which can be achieved by means of rectification and a low-pass filter, which can be as simple as an RC circuit to remove remnants of the intermediate frequency. FM signals may be detected using a discriminator, a radio detector, or phase-locked loop. Continuous wave and signal sideband signals require a product detector using a so-called beat frequency oscillator, and there are other techniques used for different types of modulation. The resulting audio signal, for instance, is then amplified and drives a loudspeaker. When so-called high side injection has been used, where the local oscillator is at a high frequency, then the received signal, as in common, then the frequency spectrum of the original signal will be reversed. This must be taken into account by the demodulator and in the IF filtering in the case of certain types of modulation such as single sideband. Let me reset. Now we'll talk about multiple conversion. To overcome obstacles such as image response, some receivers use multiple successive stages of frequency conversion and multiple IFs of different values. A receiver with two frequency conversions and IFs is called a dual conversion superheterodyne, and with three IFs is called a triple conversion superheterodyne. The main reason that this is done is that with a single IF, there is a trade-off between low image response and selectivity. The separation between the received frequency and the image frequency is equal to twice the IF frequency, so the higher the IF, the easier it is to design an RF filter to remove the image frequency from the input and achieve low image response. However, the higher the IF, the more difficult it is to achieve high selectivity in the IF filter. At shortwave frequencies and above, the difficulty in obtaining sufficient selectivity in the tuning with the high IFs needed for low image response impacts performance. To solve this problem, two IF frequencies can be used, first converting the input frequency to a high IF to achieve low image response, and then converting the frequency to a low IF to achieve good selectivity in the second IF filter. To improve tuning, a third IF can be used. Let me reset. And for example, for a receiver that can tune from 500 kHz to 30 MHz, three frequency converters must be used. With a 455 kHz IF, it is easy to get adequate front end selectivity with broadcast band under 1600 kHz signals. For example, if the station being received is on 600 kHz, the local oscillator can be set at 1055 kHz, giving an image on negative 600 plus 1055 equaling 455 kHz. But a station on 1510 kHz could also potentially produce an image at, which would be 1510 minus 1055 equals 455 kHz, and so cause image interference. However, because the 600 kHz and 1510 kHz are so far apart, It is easy to design the front end tuning to reject the 1510 kHz frequency. And before I turn it over to Dave, KB9EWG, I'm going to see if there's anyone that would like to check in or if anybody has any comments. Not hearing any additional check-ins or any comments, I'm going to turn the mic over to Dave, KB9EWG. The show is all yours.
Well, thank you, Woody, and good evening to all from KB9EWG. Okay, continuing from Woody's section, at 30 megahertz, things are different. The oscillator would be set at 30.455 megahertz to produce a 455 kilohertz IF, but a station at 30.910 would also produce a 455 kilohertz beat, so both stations would be heard at the same time. But it is virtually impossible to design an RF-tuned circuit that can adequately discriminate between 30 megahertz and 30.91 megahertz. So one approach is to bulk down convert whole sections of the shortwave band to a lower frequency, where adequate front end tuning is easier to arrange. For example, the range from 29 megahertz to 30 megahertz, 28 megahertz to 29 megahertz, etc., might be converted down to 2 megahertz to 3 megahertz. There can be a tune more conveniently. This is also done by first converting each block of up to higher frequency, typically 40 megahertz, and then using a second mixer to convert it down to the 2 megahertz to 3 megahertz range. The 2 megahertz to 3 megahertz IF, basically another self-contained superheterodyne receiver, most likely with a standard IF of 455 kilohertz. So at this point, let us summarize the evening. At first, look at the superheterodyne receiver. May look daunting in reality. It is quite straightforward if you remember it starts with a RF section, goes into a mixer, comes out into an IF stage, meets a second mixer, enters a second IF stage, and then the signal is demodulated, amplified, and heard on your speakers or speakers. Secondly, just remember that this type of receiver is simply playing the game of changing frequencies. When two frequency signals are combined, it produces two additional signals. One, the sum of both, and the difference between both. Before we wind up and close this program, do we have any further questions, comments, or check-ins? If so, come now, please. This is KB9EWG for SCARS.
KE5ALF.
KE5ALF, go ahead.
Thank you, David. I just wanted to say, I think this was, in my opinion, one of the most informative nets we've had. I found the information very, very informative and very well done. I'm glad we did this one. That's KE5ALF. Turn it back to net control.
Well, I must agree. My compliments to Gordon and anybody else that contributed to the writing of this evening's script here. Well put together and well executed. Thank you there, Greg. Any else questions or comments or anything else before I wrap up the net here? This is KB9EWG.
Hotel Alpha.
Just wanted to say good evening.
Okay, I got Hotel Alpha, and I think I've got, I think there was Mark in there also. Mark, you double with HA. Mark, you just want to say good evening? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say good evening. I was sort of listening along. We're going to go to a club meeting tonight. You know, and time just keeps going faster than the, with this time change. It seems like the time goes quicker. Don't know, but we'll send it back to net and we'll catch everyone else Saturday morning, KSFQV.
KSFQV, Okay, Mark, thank you so much. And Fred, K2HA, go ahead.
Okay, this is Fred, K2HA, over here in Broomall, Pennsylvania. The well, when I was young, my parents bought me a SX-99 Hallicrafters receiver, and I used that for years and years and years. But it, the selectivity and sensitivity wasn't the best. I always dreamed of moving up to Hallicrafters 101, but never did. The but I did buy a Q multiplier from Heathkit, put that together and added it to the receiver, and that improved it immensely. Now I know what the Q multiplier does after listening to this program. Thank you all very much. This is Fred, K2HA.
Well, thank you, Fred. Interesting comments there. And kind of reminds me of me when I was younger. I had a number of receivers at one point or another. I had a Hallicrafters model S120. I had some other receivers. And what was interesting was I had a couple of different shortwave receivers that did not have a BFO on them. I found myself using another AM radio and using the the beat frequency from the another receiver into the shortwave receiver I was trying to listen to there, and to be able to decode sideband that way. So I guess I kind of was experimenting with that, some of that stuff on my own there, without knowing what I was doing, just playing around. So it worked well. But thank you, Fred, for the comments there. Like I said, once again, my compliments to Gordon and anybody else who might have worked on the script. It was a great script this evening. So I'm going to take one more look for check-ins here. It says K9EWG Net Control for the TIN this evening. Look for check-ins. Otherwise, I'll secure the net. Okay, well, I think the backbone, my ham shack hotline, was ringing there during my section there. So I think I might be getting called for doing some testing here. So I'll wrap things up. So, okay, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for coming by this evening. This has been SCARS, VOIP, general information. If you found it on our website, www.scarsvoip.com. That's www.scarsvoip.com. This is K9EWG closing this net for this evening. Return the frequency back to normal amateur use, 7-3 to all. And I think I'm going to be called for testing here, as I was... I think I was getting called on my bad phone. KB9EWG clear, and the net is now returned to normal amateur use.